Yeah, so how was last couple days?
Last couple days, though, just trying to go back and follow up on some, you know, some leads that we've made offers on or talked to people that I have in my active offers.
Yep.
And just trying to just reach back out to them and see if we can get some dialogue going and figure out whether we're sitting on them. A lot of them kind of got lost in the shuffle without having a good system to keep track of where we were at with them and whatnot. So I got that all pretty well ironed out and just making some contacts
moving
again.
Forward.
I'm sorry. How? Just using the status.
Okay.
And I put in the statuses, I put follow-ups. So, like, if we make the first call, it'll actually make a task for it to call back the next day for the next 5 days.
Cool.
So if it doesn't get called back on tomorrow, then that same task will come back up on Wednesday until it actually gets moved to the next status. And then it'll keep coming back, and it'll hit it again for 5 days in a row each time it moves up. So I'm going to try to reach out to these numbers at least 5 times in about a week so they keep coming up so we can make sure we get through to them.
Yeah, make sure, like we were talking about last Thursday too, that you're logging, whoever's making the call is putting in attempt one left message at whatever time of day.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So we're definitely got something in place now where my sales guy can manage it off of the tasks coming in, and then when he gets through those, then he's going to go ahead and start calling the new numbers that are in that haven't been called yet. So he's going
to
have enough to just keep himself
involved.
Yeah,
that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. Follow-ups today first, and then new leads when those are done, and that way you don't start missing stuff.
Yeah. So I think we're working in the right direction. He had some stuff going on on Friday. His son got in a wreck and totaled his car. And he had to go pick him up. He was okay.
He
set off the airbag. Yeah, he's okay. He set off airbags and stuff, though, and he's pretty beat up from the airbag. But
that's almost an automatic total anymore, isn't it, when the airbags pop?
Oh, absolutely. Just about any new car, 3 to 5 years old, I don't care if you got 20,000 miles on it. If you blow the airbags, there's a pretty good chance it's totaled.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Side note. Yeah, I just heard that recently.
Yep.
Well, now Carfax will say, accident airbags didn't deploy, or airbags did deploy.
Yeah.
Like
and
anyway,
generally, when the airbags in the dash,
they
go off, it breaks the whole dash apart, so you gotta put a whole new dash in them.
Oh, man.
Not just the steering wheel. And then if the side curtain airbags go off, I mean, you're talking thousands of dollars just to replace airbags. So that's why they usually
get crazy.
But anyway,
that's
so he's
well,
okay.
He didn't
end up making any calls on Friday or Saturday because he was dealing with that. So he's back on it today. He started at 3 o'clock their time. So that's 6 o'clock now, East Coast. So he's been on the phone for about 3 hours. I was able to listen in. Today's the first day he's actually calling through FreedomSoft.
That's key, right? And you heard the
calls? And I went back and listened to one of his calls. He's doing okay. I think he's probably needs to stop a little bit more and listen a little bit more.
You see how key that is, though? And, like, here's the thing about it. You guys are, you know, playing around with some numbers, and you got another phone system, and this is the refinement that it takes to get acquisitions dialed in. So I'm glad you're starting to hear it, because now you've got a guy that you're on the phone and you're just now hearing him, and I say, hey, how's he doing? And you say, he's doing okay.
Yeah.
So you see how key this is, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
I underestimated it too, I'll be honest with you, until I listened. It's absolutely critical that you hear what's going on.
Gotta have it for sure. And I'll just get with him. I didn't want to come in too close to our calling meeting, so I just want to let him kind of work through what he's got to work through and all. But it definitely, I mean, I'll know
Sherry.
Exactly when. when he's making calls, and I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty good. So that's that's we're just kind of starting back again and starting to head back in. I told him, you know, we gotta get some offers going. I mean, it's been 2 weeks, we haven't made no offers. That's a problem.
Yeah, and here's the thing that's really good about this. At first, making offers creates the tension, because especially if somebody's new and they've never done it, you're like, oh my gosh, right? I'm going to sign contracts and with my name on them, and then it doesn't take many, and you get beyond that, and now the tension that you just told me is, wait a minute, it's been a week and we haven't made an offer. And now that's a positive. So I know you're in a lull, but I'm just telling you that the last three things you told me, number one, you're using statuses to track leads better, and you're calling follow-ups before new leads. That's huge, because there's money in those, right? You're just not getting a hold of some people, and you were losing track of how many times you've called and who to call. Second thing is you can now track the number of calls being made, because they're calling through FreedomSoft and then the call recording, and they've got to listen to themselves too. I mean, that's what's so valuable about it, is we think we sound a certain way and then we go back and hear it, right? And just, that's how you sharpen the axe.
Okay. So, how do I give him access to listen to his own calls in FreedomSoft?
Yeah. So you're going to have to turn on, good question. I don't think he has to be, he may have to have full permission. Let me look at, that's a great question. And I don't know the answer off the top of my head.
Okay.
Great question.
Cause I'll have him go back and listen to himself just to refine it.
Yeah. Or I believe there's a download feature in there, and I haven't looked at this as well. So I'm making a mental note to check out both of these.
Okay.
But that would be another option, is to get a copy of it over to him just as an MP3 file. So,
okay.
But yeah.
I want to be transparent with him too. So I would like him to be able to go back and listen to his own calls and have,
you know,
that.
Yeah. That's how you sharpen the axe. He'll want to as well, because it's a profitable activity.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. Great. Stay on.
My bird dog in Richmond's doing really. He's still doing a really good job. He's been pounding the leads out. I'm getting, you know, around 100 leads a week just from him.
That's awesome.
And that's enough for kind of the pace we're at right now until I get to the next stage where I have to add either another acquisitions guy and then put a dispositions person in there. So I'm not gonna. I told him I'm gonna just allow him to just continue to keep working at his pace and bringing in leads from Richmond, and then we'll when I get to a point, he's interested. I don't know if I told you, but that my bird dog from Richmond, he was taking photographs and stuff for some of the banks and stuff when they do a repo and they go back in. So he has the interest in the industry, and he wants to learn more about the investing side, and this, he knows, is kind of a stepping stone. So he seems real shy, though. I mean, he seems like a real quiet, just kind of like straightforward guy. So before I explore putting him in a position, I'll have him do a disc test and see where he comes in.
That's absolutely it. Yeah, I'm not saying that a photographer isn't super outgoing. I think it would lend nicely to somebody that was a little more introverted and non-salesy, but you never know. There are people of all types that do all occupations, so you absolutely have to go off the disc test, or you're wasting your time.
And on the dispositions position, what do you look for in that as well?
What's same as acquisitions, to sales, the sales position,
high
B. You got to go sell the deals, and you got to drive them to closing. And so you want somebody that doesn't take their foot off the gas.
Okay.
Yep, exact same person.
So yeah, we're still pressing.
Cool.
Everything else, we're on track.
It'll pop. Yep. Stay on the right activities produce right results, and you're starting to see now a little bit of momentum. Then it kind of died off. Now you've had to put your business owner hat on, and you're out there. So you've got leads. You're making calls on a daily basis. The other thing we do is meet buyers. How many buyers have you met in the last 7 days? putting you on the spot a little bit.
Probably 10.
Okay. That's a decent number.
Of them.
Let's see it. Yep. Yeah. Let's see if you can talk to 3 to 5 a day.
Yeah. And those are, I mean, I've called way more than that. I've called probably 30.
So you're chatting. You've chatted with 10. Okay. So
I've actually got 10 I added to my buyers list.
Okay. So you're going to have, you can build a little workflow automation for buyers if you want. But you're going to be tracking those. Reach out to people multiple times in more than one way and get that network growing. But that is,
definitely.
I mean, with the deals that we have going right now, we're tapping into the network a little bit. Got to find a buyer.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about this? We need private money. So I got on the phone with our network last week, and we got referred a couple buyers. We put $200,000 in private money together from other people that are just in the network. So that's where the relationships get put together.
Okay.
So yeah, it's good stuff, Mike. Stay on it. I mean, you're like the rest of us where, hey, I want results now. But good actions produce good results. And so stay at it. It's one of those, sales is one of those things where it goes, you're going to experience some highs and lows as a team, you know, and then life happens and his son gets in a car accident, and that's called being in business.
Yeah.
So,
and on that other two properties I had under contract, so the one that was a real pain, the guy was a real nuisance to deal with getting access to the property. So I sent him, and actually my my 21-day period was over today.
Okay.
But I sent it to him on Friday, emailed it to him, just a notification to cancel the contract, and I had the contract information on there and from my company, his whatever, all that stuff, and I sent it to him, and I sent him a text also saying, hey, you've got an important document I emailed to you, need to take a look at, and I hadn't heard back from him for like 4 hours, and he texted me and said, I didn't receive it, can you send it again? I said, okay, so I sent it again and told him I sent it again. I said, it hadn't bounced back either time, so it should be there.
Yeah.
And then he contacted me with an email Saturday morning saying that, you don't have time for this kind of nonsense, yada, yada, yada. And I didn't even respond back. I'm like, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah. You didn't have time for his non-inspection nonsense, so whatever.
Exactly. That's why I'm not going to encourage or instigate anything. I just left it at that.
Yep.
So, other than that, he's
been
we're
sitting out, yeah. He doesn't have other options. You're fine. I mean, 9.9 out of 10 people are great to work with, and there are always some goofballs out there. That's right. That's just called reality as well. So,
and we were so anxious to get stuff under contract that, I was probably a little more tolerant than I should have been even up front. So it's just part of the learning curve, starting to tighten it up and say, if you guys are not serious, if you're not high motivated, and they're giving you the pim off, then move on. Either get them to a point where they're serious, or just don't waste time.
You know, and one of the big advantages, obviously, when the pipeline starts to get full, is that closings are making money. But the other thing it does is it puts kind of that attitude behind the business. Not that we're not being cordial or taking care of anybody, but it helps to set up the we don't need your business mindset. And so when somebody like that is just not playing ball, like we had a guy today, he wasn't getting us in for inspection. And so Chris, our acquisitions guy, he's got the flu. He's been out, right? This is just part of what happens.
Gary.
So I call this guy and say, hey, we've got to get in. Chris calls him on Friday or on Saturday, shoots him a text on Sunday. And so we had our team call this morning, and I was like, Chris, listen, draw a line in the sand. Say, we have to get into the house. It's in the paperwork. We got to get this figured out today, or we're not moving forward. Just, we have to get in. And it's in the contract. This isn't a surprise. Get us inside the place. And so, it's finally going to happen, but that's just part of it. I told him, we want these two deals, but we have others. So if this guy doesn't want to play ball, let's wash our hands and go find somebody that does. So anyway, it's good to have that. It's hard to have that mindset when there's nothing in the pipeline, but it's still the right mindset to have. Right? You're looking for motivation, and some people are going to say they're motivated, and then they're going to act like they're not. And so you're going to have to, you know, based on the situation, just say, hey, when and where are we going to draw this line? And I think what you'll find is the busier you get, the sooner that line gets drawn, and you start working with people that need and want to sell. So
yeah, and we waste good stuff, Mike. A bit of time chasing that around instead of just moving on to things that we're going to.
That's right. That's exactly what happens. Is you just start to
all the egg into real estate.
Life gets so busy, and there's so much going on, and you just are going to have to pick and choose who to work with, and you want to work with the motivated ones, obviously. So
yeah,
good update. So, yeah, man, push through it. Push through it. You guys are doing good stuff. You know, blast out of this little lull. But it's taken the lull to put some better systems in place. And so,
yeah,
you know, you start reaping the rewards of that. And that, you know, that's how it goes. We're always learning something. I mean, Brad and, you know, I talked to Rob. They're always learning stuff. Hey, here's a better way to do this. How about this? Here's how we had to do this. I mean, I know we have some new people on here, so I'll tell you that. I think the guy's still in jail. They had a general contractor in Memphis thrown in jail for stealing from him. So, it's not all smooth sailing for anybody. That's how it is. So, you know, we're just in business here. And so they didn't open up Memphis and say, hey, you know, I hope we have to take legal action and here's how this goes. But that's the way it ended up. And they flew out there, filed a police report, this, that, and the other, proved it. The guy's still locked up. Actually, they had two of them. They had another guy they found out was stealing. And it's not funny, but they basically called him and said, hey, Joe's in jail, so a couple options here. You can either join him or you can work off your debt to us. And he chose plan B.
Wisely.
Wisely, yeah. But, yeah, they run into stuff too. It's just – it's part of it. So we keep pushing forward, and, that's part of it. We're in business. So, you know, it's not all puppy dogs and rainbows. So, yeah, Mike, good stuff. I love it. I love that this call is just real, right? Hey, here's a win. All right, here's my frustration. Where are we at? So, let's address it all. Who else?
Mike, I have a question.
Hey.
So this is Sherry.
Okay.
A couple of questions. How often do you think those kind of situations happen? Is that, like, not as often?
Hard to say.
Okay.
It's not super. Throwing a guy in jail? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I mean, like general contractors stealing from you because you're not on site, you know.
Oh well, here's how they do it, and I can just tell you, if you planned most of the conversation on here is about wholesaling, where you're not going to be buying materials, but the way they do it is, and here's what I'll tell you. That's the first guy that Brad and Rob have thrown in jail, and they've been in real estate for a long time, so hopefully that answers that. But they buy all the materials, and then so what they do is they have when somebody in a remote market goes to put a bid on a house and give them a number, they say bid the labor, estimate the materials for us. That's what we want. We're going to be buying materials, so they're ours. So if they walk, they have recourse. And then so bid the labor. Tell me, hey, to put drywall up in this house. Because any drywaller can tell you X number of square feet or sheets, right? X number of square feet equals X number of sheets of drywall, and I charge X amount per sheet of drywall. So they can bid the labor and say, I'll do the drywall in this house for, $4,200, and then estimate the materials because Brad and Rob are buying the materials. So the contractor does not own them. Yeah, that's how they do it.
Okay.
And that gives you more control. And then they have about a 6-page contract that the GCs sign. I don't even have it, but it basically says, if we don't like the way you're looking at us, this thing's getting legal. So anyway, that's how they do it.
Okay. And then Mike, the gentleman that's always kind of talking in the beginning, I believe his name is Mike. How long has he been in?
A couple months, Mike? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's been right around 10 weeks.
2 months? Okay. I'm just kind of wondering if you get a lot further ahead. Okay.
Mike's full time at this. And so he came out of the gate and just hit the ground running. But you hear, that's why this is real. We're just all in it. And he's saying, hey, we came out with some momentum, and then, this has to get better. And now he just got FreedomSoft in place where he can – here's what I'm telling everybody. When you can hear the recordings, I'm telling you that it's a game changer with your acquisition team. I mean, it does not take long for you, even if you don't have sales experience, to listen to a call and say, oh, that came across sideways, or, whatever the case. So that's a really key piece. Yeah, we're getting a business moving here. So,
hey, Mike, can I ask a couple
of
questions?
Yeah, who's this?
This is Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, so I know I've been off and on the call. So, what do you normally get? What do we do? Updates first, and then questions, or what's the? Where do you?
Yeah, whatever you got. If you just have a question, fire. Yep, that's fine.
No. We had the update last. I think I was on. We had that deal that I was looking at that we actually had under contract. I have had it out to the buyers. I just literally before we got on the call got a commitment from one of the buyers to sell it. So as soon as we get off, I'll be moving over there. Yeah, so that's exciting.
Let me ask you this. When is earnest money going in from your buyer, and how much? And when will it be at title?
That's a good question. I don't know that yet. I'll have to.
Okay, here's the mindset. A verbal is great when a buyer says, hey, I'll take it. What's better is, grab that earnest money. We usually collect $1,500. It depends on how much you have out. But, get that earnest money over to the title.
Yep, I'm with you.
Nice job. What are the numbers on it? Remind me. What do you have it for?
Yeah,
and then what do you have it sold for verbally?
Yeah, that ties into my question here. So the agreement with the buyer is to have it – we've got it at 16, and I don't remember when I talked about it last time. It's pretty trashed inside. So one of my questions was verbal from the buyer is 22. I told him I wanted 27. He said, well, are you flexible? And I said, well, what do you need to make it work? And he said 22. So I told him I would check, and I'll probably go back and see if we can do 23 or 24. But long story short, 16, 22. My question was, how many times do you go back to the seller and say, hey, we've got this deal, we're ready to go, but we need to adjust the price a little bit because it's overly trashed or whatever excuse you give, or do you just always take it for what it is at the seller?
That is a great question. And I'll tell you, I was in the middle of this a little while ago, and I'll tell you what we did, and then you can go back, because once you have an inspection, especially if a place is beat up, you have a big rock to stand on to say, hey, we're going to beat down your price a little bit, or I'm at least going to ask for it. Right.
Right.
And I'll tell you what we did. So we had a lady, an elderly gal, own the house. We talked to her. She said, yeah, we'll be interested in selling, but you have to talk to my daughter. I think she was early 90s, something like that. So we got on the phone with her daughter. She said, yep, we'll consider it. Why are you selling? What's your reason for getting rid of it? We solve problems, the whole nine. And she goes, you know what? Honestly, we're going to transition my mom into assisted living, and that's what we're going to use the money for. There's a balance on the house of 33 grand, yada, yada, yada. So we got it. I think we got it. We bought it for 60. We covered the closing costs. And then this is the one that we closed 2 weeks ago for a $17,000 assignment. And after inspection, we had a rock to stand on. And so we did a powwow with the team. And we said, hey, are we going to go back and ask for a price reduction? We had all the cards. We know they owe 33. I talked to Paul. It was up to he and I, my business partner, and I said, listen, man, here's the thing. If we leave the deal as is, can we get it for cheaper? Probably. But if we leave it as is, does everybody win? Are we all happy with it? They can transition mom. We have a $17,000 assignment fee for making a couple phone calls, and our end buyer's getting a deal that they can, do a fix and flip on and make 25 to 35.
Yeah,
and we just decided everybody's winning currently. Let's leave it. There was another one that we did an inspection on, and there was a kitchen fire, and we had the deal at 15. It was a decent deal still at 15, but we had our bid is 30 to 35 grand. I don't like to go over 30 in our business model, and I get a little nervous going north of 25. So I think our fix up on this one's going to be 28 to 32, probably. We had the deal at 15. You know, Zillow says it's worth 65. Those are still good numbers. We went back and said, you know, we have to redo all HVAC, all plumbing, all electrical, big budget. And we went back and offered 8. And they said, you know what, guys, at 8, we're not making anything. Can you do 10? And we settled at 10.
Gotcha.
So two scenarios. Hopefully that helps. There isn't a right or wrong answer here, to be honest. You just have to kind of look at the situation and say,
yeah,
here's the
deal.
It
was more of a question of, is that standard process to consider? And it sounds like obviously it is. Anything's up for the deal until the deal is actually done. So I'm with you.
Yep. And here's the process. You did this in the right order. It is. Get it under contract, then inspect it, then renegotiate if necessary. That absolutely is the right order.
Okay.
So
that brings up my next question. So we've got in our city, you're probably familiar with the guys, Memphis Invest, their clothiers team. And they talking with their buyer, they're looking for a 6-7 cap. I don't know. Are you familiar with them or their business model?
I'm not, but hook me up with that buyer. Goodness.
Yeah, exactly.
7 cap. Wait a minute.
Exactly, because what they're doing is they're buying from wholesalers, turning around, fixing it up, selling it turkey to investors for 6-7%, and then they're putting every property under management. So that's their business model. So back to the point is 6-7. So I've got deals. My next kind of question is, do you always lock up the deal first and then talk to the buyers, or do you at least kind of check pulse first to kind of get an idea where they're at before you make an offer?
Check pulse first. Yeah.
Okay.
When you can, here's the thing, you can do it either way and they both can work. You can say, nah, I'm going to get a deal first and then I've got something to talk to buyers about. We like it to happen slightly buyer first or at least simultaneous. And the reason is because when you talk to buyers first and get a feel for what they want, it helps acquisitions.
Yep.
Because now, you know, I say, Steve is buying this cap in this part of town. And so I'm on the phone with a seller, and I was like, hey, this is Steve's neighborhood. Bam, bam, bam. Yep. He'll buy it at this. I just crunch some numbers real quick and say, okay, I got to be here. And I'm calling Steve next and saying, hey, I got one for you.
Yeah, you're talking bigger picture. I'm talking specific to a property. Do you ever give the property information? And I could have already made a huge mistake. I don't know. I said, hey, here's
you
the
don't
property.
Have it under
here's
contract?
What I think it is. Yes, exactly. Not yet. No.
Yeah, if that's based on a relationship with the buyer, if I know him, and I've got a couple buyers where, you know, they just flat out said, I was like, hey, man, I'm working on one. Here's the deal. And the guy told me, he goes, Mike, I will never undercut you if you give me an address pre-contract. And I believe him.
Right.
And so I have done it that way.
Only
if I know that. The better order is contract, then buy, then go renegotiate if you need to.
Right, understood.
Because here's how this works. Let's say I tie a deal up, and then you're my buyer, and I'm at 50 grand, and I call you, and I say, hey, Steve, what can you pay for this thing, 123 Main Street? And you go run your numbers, bam, 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 and you say, I'll give you 48. You know, okay, what does it look like? What was it in? Oh, this thing needs a ton of work, bam, 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 great. Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, we did our inspection. Here's the thing. I'd still love to help you solve this problem, but here's what this thing needs. And because of that, here's what I can now pay. I'm going to send off the new paperwork to you. Does that work for you still?
Okay. That was my concern is because I, you know, not just being new in the market, but a part of us being new in the market, but figuring out what the ARVs and the rent, and I mean, we're guesstimating best we can with the tools that we have, but ultimately, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if I think it's a good deal. The buyer's either going to say he wants it or he doesn't. He or she.
Got it.
So,
yep.
So they're going to drive what we can pay, and that was kind of my concern. So it sounds like, really, you're locking it up to get a commitment, then we're going to the buyers, we're seeing what they say, and then we're going back to push down if we can to get to where we want to be on the deal.
Right. And it works both ways. If I have a conversation with you and I ask the right questions, what do you buy?
Yeah.
What property types? What locations? How do you run
for
your numbers?
Sure.
The whole goal there is I want to be able to see a deal through your eyes.
Understood. I've been having those conversations. I'm with you on that one. I understand feeding the buyers what they want. I get that. It was more of a specific on a deal-to-deal basis. So there was going to be another – I have another question. Okay. Well, that's pretty straightforward. So then we can just lock them up. And, go ahead.
Yep. And if you have a buyer you trust, I'd call you up and say, hey, Steve, I've got this one. Full disclosure, man. I've got it tied up at 50. Tell me what you can pay for it. I'd like to move it for 60. I think there's still plenty of room on the back, blam, bam, bam. And you'll either come back and tell me, hey, Mike, here's what I found. Because, right, if I'm remote, I'm going to say, I called you first.
Yep.
Here's what the seller is telling me the place needs. Let's get you inside it. And then they're either going to agree with what the seller said about the condition, or they're not, and they're going to say, no. They haven't been in this thing for a while, or they're lying to you. It needs X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Good question.
I'm with you. So that was that brings up the next question, which is when you go to the buyer, are you saying, hey, this is what I want, this is what I'm going to make, or do you – I mean, because I can see both sides. If you're working with somebody and you guys have a good relationship and they don't really care that you're doing what you're doing, in terms of wholesaling, they get it. I can see the transparency is helpful. But what about when it's new? I mean, in some ways, I see it as an opportunity for them to just beat you down because, I want – so how do you handle that?
Yep. Another good question. Depends on the relationship with the buyer. If it's one of my A buyers, I just come right out and say, I'm trying to make 12 on this one. Here's how I'm running the numbers. I think there's plenty of room on the back end for you to make it on this thing. There isn't a right or wrong. You can also go to them and just say, hey, I've got it for sale at 55. Let me know if that number works for you.
Right. Understood. Yeah. No, so, and I've been given them what I see the deal as, so what it would work out for them. But ultimately, we said a minute ago, they're going to come back and say, yeah, that works or that doesn't. And
that's fine.
This is, for me, it's more about how many deals can I do, not how much can I make off of one deal. So you go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sounds like your target is a little higher. Are you trying to hit 10 plus on every deal, or is just kind of case by case?
Yeah, it depends. So we, when Paul and I buy a house, do some fix up and then sell it turnkey. We want to average 20. So there's a wholesale fee to ourselves on the front.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a back end play. If you're just in the wholesale game, you can kind of, figure out where you want to be, but 7,500 to 10 grand is a great little, and here's the thing. I don't want to limit somebody to what you think you can make, but
I understand. Yeah, of course.
If you're turning little beaters, to make 7,500 to 10 and averaging that price point on, little 8 to 1,200 square foot houses that are 30 to 50 grand, those are decent numbers. If you're in Denver, you're not averaging 70. If you're averaging $7,500 a deal, you're doing something wrong, because the deals are so much bigger, right? So it's got to be in proportion to where you're at. But
So I think I'm with you. So and that kind of goes back to figuring out the numbers. The couple of deals that we're looking at. Yeah, I've got some buyers that they only want an 11 cap or better. Okay, well that makes it kind of hard sometimes because it's got to be about a lot more room in that deal. But you get the guy like that wants
Let me tell you all the key question. This is worth the price of admission with buyers. Because you want to ask them that question. What do you buy? Are you looking for a certain cap rate or return on your investment, like a time frame?
Yep.
And they say, I buy 11 caps. Your very next question is you undermine what they just said. And so, all right, Steve, you're looking for 11 caps. Let me get this straight. If I have a 10 cap property in let's call it a B+ neighborhood, you don't even want me to call you, right? They're always going to backpedal. Always, always, always. Just about every time.
Okay.
So that's the question. They're going to tell you, I only buy this. And they're usually going to come from a position of strength, right? Like, I don't buy anything less than a 12 cap. Okay, I just want to be clear. So if I have an 11 cap tomorrow that's in a B+ neighborhood, you don't even want me to call you with the details, right? And take it away.
Right.
at a deal that's slightly below that. And what you're going to find is these hard-nosed sometimes buyers that are saying, this is all I do, they're going to become more flexible than how they're going to come across. But you've got to ask that question.
I'm with you. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we're getting the property, we're putting in a contract, and we're throwing it out to the sharks. And whatever they come back with is where we end up making the deal work. It's not necessarily about what – I mean, they may target an 8 cap or 11 or whatever, but if ultimately they look at it, they're going to I understand. I am probably sounding like I don't know what I'm saying. I'm following what you're saying. Is ultimately we're getting it, we're sending it out to them, and then whatever feedback we get from them is dictates where we go from there. So I think that's pretty clear.
Yep. And then this is why you get to know your buyers, because you will start to make offers with more and more confidence. Like
right.
I know Steve needs 10 deals this month. I got an email from one of those buyers, actually the guy that we just assigned that $17,000 deal to a couple weeks ago. He sent an email because I'm on his list that says he has $1.3 million to spend this month.
Yep.
On acquisitions. And so I called as soon as that email hit, I got a hold of Chris and I was like, listen, man, let's go find this guy a couple deals. I just got an email that says he has $1.3 million to spend. We know he closes. We knew he closed before. We just sold him a deal. I mean, let's go find him 2 to 3 more. I mean, let's step on it, right? He's got money to spend.
Yep.
He's easy to work with. You know, that's the beauty of everybody wants to work with people you know, like, and trust. In your buyer's list, you're going to build a big buyer's list to find your 10 VIPs. And those are the people that you get along with. You know they close. They always have money to spend. And you're going to get to know them, and it's going to become less of, hey, Steve, are you interested in this? It's going to become more of, hey, Steve, I got you another one. Closing date's the 23rd. Here's what it needs. Go inspect it. Verify what I'm telling you, and we'll get money to
right, I understand.
We'll get earnest money.
I got you.
That's where
you.
It goes. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
Good questions. What? Anything else, Steve?
No, I think that's it. I've just got
to
go.
Hey, so I wanted to recap this deal real quick for everybody. You've got it at 16. You're going to move it. Let's just say you move it at 22. How much work does it need?
I'm thinking it probably needs 25 to 30 grand. It's pretty beat up.
Okay, so your end buyer's into it for 22,000. Let's call it 30. That's 52 grand, and it's a rental.
Yep.
I'm assuming.
Yes, rental.
What does it rent for?
700 a month, probably.
700.
C-class, yep, C-class neighborhood should be something like 10 plus.
So 700 times 70% is 490 net monthly,
mm-hmm.
times 12, 5880 net annual.
Yep.
Divided by it's
52
and then 1,000 in closing costs. So 53,000 is 11.1 cap.
Yeah.
Little deal. How many beds and baths?
I think it's 3, 1.5.
Okay, that's decent. And how many square feet?
1,200 maybe. Maybe
and
not
it
that
only
much.
Pulls
maybe 1,000.
Oh, double check that rent. That seems low to me. Now markets vary, but in light of the other markets we've discussed on this particular call on office hours,
yes,
700 a month seems low for that size property, 3, 1.5.
Okay,
I'm not saying
well,
you're wrong.
No, I understand. I've just in the it's certainly sea level. It's not ghetto, but it's in the rough part of town. So I don't know from what we've looked, 700. So, but
right.
Could be more.
Yeah, I run that. I don't know if you know a property manager in town, but
we didn't do
you,
that.
You have it under. Yeah, this one's ready to go. What I'm going to pull it up on Zillow really quick.
Yeah, we did this on the – I did call the property manager on another one we're looking at and did the very thing, and they came back and said 3.2s or 850. So we've got that as an anchor point.
You're 3.1.5. What's the address?
Which one?
The one you're talking about, 700 a month.
That one is let me look here. It is – 1436 Southwest Binkley, Binkley Drive, Oklahoma City, 73119.
Southwest Binkley Drive. What was the zip?
73119.
73119. Search. No results found. And it's Southwest Binkley, not just South?
Correct. It's Southwest. Are you looking on maps or where are you looking?
I'm on Zillow.
Yeah, it's Southwest 14-1436 Southwest Binkley.
Yeah, Southwest Binkley Drive. Huh. I just wanted to check it out live time here.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oklahoma City?
Yeah. You know what? Let me look here. That's – no, that's not. Yes, it is Oklahoma City.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for hanging on. This is live television here.
Actually, yeah, it may come up as Binkley Street. That might be part of it, too.
Let me try that.
Zillow has it as 1272 for 1.5, but I think it's a 3 1.5.
All right, now we're cooking when I put in Binkley Street.
There you go.
It says 4-bed, 1.5-bath, 1272.
Yeah, I think the square foot's right. I think it's a 3-bed, though, but either way.
Okay, not a bad-looking little place. I'm on the street view here. And
yeah,
Zillow says 750, so your deal for your end buyer only gets better as rents go up, clearly. But, yeah, this is a sweet spot rental. Now, location is everything, right? But 3 or 4-bed, more than one bathroom, and just under 1,300 square feet.
Yep.
That's a sweet little deal. So, cool. What's closing date set for?
I don't know. That's the one you were asking me before. Talks cheap, money talks, or whatever you were saying. So we got to
What's the closing date on the contract? Did you do 30 days?
Oh, yeah. Signature? I put it into March. So we've got till the end of March to close.
Okay. So end of this month or prior. And do you have escrow opened with title?
I do not yet. I don't have anything with title. This is the first deal, so I'm figuring all the moving parts out as I go here.
Yep. As soon as you have signed contract in place, get that sucker over to your title company. So have you talked to other investors and asked who's the investor-friendly title company in town?
Yes, I've talked to several. He told me what he uses here. Just a second. He uses Chicago, but there's Old Republic as well in town. So we'll figure it out. And they everybody I've talked to said they do double closings or simultaneous or assignment, whichever. So
yep. Beautiful. That's the question to have right there. I usually ask investors who's the investor friendly rep or title company in town until I get more than one investor to give me the same title company and or closer.
Right.
And then you've got multiple, but good stuff, man. Yeah, get that title over, because title can blow up a deal, clearly, if the owner doesn't know what's going on. We have one that we've been sitting on for 3 months trying to get a lien cleared. So you want to know what's on there as soon as possible. So get that off. And they just needed the contract. Call up first and say, hey, I've never ordered through you. I've been referred to you by a couple other investors in town. That's what I do. I'm remote. Bam, bam, bam. I've got a contract. Where do I send it?
Now, are you going to do that with – You're saying you're going to do that with whoever you close with, correct?
The title company, yep. And they're going to start research on it. And then what's your earnest money to the seller? How much?
Earnest to the seller was the $10 that you guys use in your standard contract. Yeah.
Send a $10 check to the title company.
Oh, okay. Well, I screwed that up then. So we gave her $10, but that's fine.
That's okay.
$10.
Yep, that's okay.
So.
Money, yep. Any future money, just send it to title.
Got it. Okay. So
get escrow open.
Understood. But we're not going to do that. We're not going to open escrow until we have a buyer, correct?
No, you want escrow at contract.
Okay.
Yep.
Got it.
Because you may not get a buyer until a week out, and it's going to take you 6 days to get title back. And then you're going to postpone closing.
Got it. See, I didn't know. These are the pieces and parts I wasn't familiar with. Okay. So as soon as you have contract, you're sending it to the title company to get it. So what happens if your buyer wants to close at a different title company than you started escrow with.
Too bad.
Okay.
That's where escrow is open. Yeah, you're just going to tell them. I mean, the title company is in place before the buyer. It's not going to be an issue. But, yeah, hey, this is the title company handling escrow. This is where the wire goes. And that's how this deal is operating. So, yeah, won't be an issue. Escrow has been established. Yep. Title company has been picked.
Okay. Yep. Well, it sounds like you've got to go make more offers now. Yeah.
Sellers pick title. I mean, just when you're going to buy a house to live in and they have it listed with an agent, title company's already been selected. You say, I want to buy it, and they say, we're closing with Chicago Title.
Which makes sense why you have the title company in the contract because you already know where you're going to go. I understand. Yep.
Typically. Yep. We're trying a couple different ones right now. We've heard that Boston National will allow double closings with the end buyer's funding your purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So we're setting up a relationship with them. Brad and Rob use them in Memphis. And we're also talking to a local title company out of Denver that Paul and I have used for years. She sold and is now part of a nationwide network. We're giving them a shot too. We will likely go with one or the other long-term and just say, hey, you know, because we want to deal with the same team.
What's the question we need to be asking then when I call them up and say, hey, I've got a deal. I want a simultaneous closing. Can I use my buyer's funds to fund my purchase?
That's the question right there. Or are they going to make you send money from different sources for both transactions?
Okay.
Because then you have to either fund it yourself or use flash cash. That's going to cost you a little bit of money.
Right.
So ideally, yep, on a double close, and this is, right, we're getting a little bit technical. I know this is going to bring up questions, but if today's our double close and we are the wholesaler, we're the middleman, we are going to sell it. So we're going to sell, and it's called the ABCs of the transaction, where we're always B, wholesaler's B. A is the seller who owns the property currently. We're B, and your end buyer is C. So we have an A to B transaction and a B to C transaction. In the A to B transaction, my company's buyer. In the B to C transaction, my company is seller. And the way a double closing works is, a B to C transaction, let's say it was today, is going to happen today at 10 a.m. I'm going to sell a property I don't own yet. My end buyer, C, is going to wire in the funding based on the price that I sold it to them for. And then at 2 p.m. this afternoon, I'm going to sign as buyer on the A to B transaction. And that wire that came in, not all of it, because it's going to leave my profit in my pocket, but the purchase funds are going to go and get sent to the A-side closing, right?
Yep.
And I get it. That if you've never been a part of it, don't worry if you're swimming in that. But that's how it's going to close.
I understand. We're selling
totally
it before we buy it.
You are.
I'm sorry. Yes, we're selling before we buy it so that we can fund our purchase. I'm with you. So I just got to ask the title company if that's acceptable and then go from there. So I'm sure Chicago, who the buyer says he uses, will probably – I mean, they're familiar. He said he's done it several times. So what else
that's
do you think
what you've
I
got, yeah. Yep. If that's what you've
else
been
you
told.
Go ahead. Sorry. There's a delay. What else do you think I need to be aware of at this point?
If they can handle that. That's the cleanest way to do it.
Okay.
That's the cleanest way to do it. The other – here's just so we're clear, let me say that the title company says, nope, you can't use your end buyer's money to go purchase it. And you say, okay, you have two options. You're still – let me be really clear on this. You are still going to sell the transaction at 10 a.m. and then buy it at 2 p.m. You are not going to get that order mixed up, right? But now how this is going to work is you're going to sell it. And then once your end buyer, once their money is in escrow, that's what cues up the transactional funder to say, okay, that money's already in escrow. Now I'm comfortable funding your purchase.
Understood. Okay.
That's still how it happens.
I understand. Okay. So basically, it's really a technicality of whether you can use that money, whether you count that money as acceptable or not. And if it's not acceptable, then somebody's going to put money in temporarily until the other piece is done. I get it. Okay.
Either you or somebody else. Yep.
Yep.
Hey, somebody's having a side conversation. Hit star 6 for us to mute out. Okay. And then if you're going to come back in, you can hit star six again to unmute. Thank you.
All my other questions, I don't need. I mean, they're technical stuff on how to use Infusionsoft. I'm sorry, FreedomSoft.
FreedomSoft. Too. Okay, yeah, shoot me an email on those.
Well, I will. Other thing than that, I think it's just back out to more offers. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, nice job getting this thing tied up.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. It's not done till the check cashes, so they say. But I think it's good. We'll get there.
Get escrow opened tonight or tomorrow, first thing.
Okay.
It's going to take 4 to 6 days to get that title policy back. If you're not used to reading title policies, look it over and then shoot an email back to the person on the other end of the line. Let them be the experts and say, hey, I just read through it. I'm not seeing anything. Am I missing? Are there any outstanding liens on this? Or call them back and discuss and say, hey, I'm going to let you be the expert here. I want to make sure I'm reading this right. What are the liens? They'll typically be bulleted. Like, in order for this thing to close, these things need to happen. And a lot of times it'll start out with, money to show up, blah, blah, blah. They're going to spell out what has to happen for the transaction. And then at the end of that list, it's going to say, existing lien payable to so-and-so in the amount of X amount must be paid. And it's going to list out any lien. So read it first, right? Especially if this is just for anybody. If you're not familiar with what title looks like. And then even today, I go back to the rep who sent it over and say, hey, I'm seeing, XYZ. Am I missing anything? I don't want any surprises. So don't be afraid to lean on the experts and let them help. That's what they're there for.
Okay.
Get that sucker ordered.
Yep, we'll do. And then there is nothing else publicly that needs to happen from our buyer side. Once the title's done, whatever days that takes, then we're clear. Assuming the title's clear, then the rest of the closing moves pretty smoothly.
Typically, yeah. You want to get your title company get escrow open, because you are going to ask for earnest money that is non-refundable from your end buyer to be submitted. And so there's another contract here to be put together between you and that end buyer.
Yep,
and
understood.
You can use the same one, but list your earnest money. And on this one, that earnest money is non-refundable. They have to understand that there is no inspection period. Non-refundable earnest money.
That was my next. Yes, I'm with you. So that if they back out, I'm keeping the deposit and I have to sell it again.
You got it.
My bird dog, she could run down the cash to the title company if needed, correct?
Yeah, if your end buyer is willing to give her the check, absolutely. Just say, hey, I'll send somebody to pick it up for you.
Okay, I think that was my question is that when you said when I open the escrow, I'm the one, because I'm selling it, I'm buying it from them that's going to fund the amount, or is that them?
That, I think I'm following. So you're going to submit $10 earnest money to the title company.
Yes.
Then you're going to sell it to me. And I've got $1,500 earnest money going to the same title company.
Yeah, I'm with you now. I was talking about the $10 that I give to the seller, which I already gave. So that should just go to escrow with the title company. But that's something that the bird dog could drop off on every contract, correct?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Or just drop it in the mail. Either way.
Right, okay. And the other thing is for her, because I'm in Dallas area, I just need an attorney, power of attorney for her to sign, correct?
You could do that, yeah. Or they'll just FedEx docs over to you. Or they'll set up a closing. So title companies, especially the big ones, they have contract closers in every city USA. So you can just say, what's easiest for you guys? Do you want me to go? I mean, do you have a local branch here where I'm at? Do you have a closer that you can just have meet me in a Starbucks? That's the easier way. Or they'll print everything. They'll send it to you FedEx a couple days prior with a return overnight envelope. You'll sign it all, put it back in, and send it back. My preference is to go to a local branch or to have them coordinate a contract closer to meet me at a coffee shop. And that way they handle all the paperwork. Nothing gets missed. Or I should say it's more rare that it does. They can notarize everything, and I just wash my hands of it and I'm done. And they handle all the paperwork. That's
Understood.
My favorite
okay.
method.
Yep. Understood. All right. Well, I've got a little work ahead of me. I'll obviously email you if I have any other questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the thing, Steve. You write live ones, and this is for everybody. You get in the middle like this, and things start popping, and you're not sure how to handle it or what to do, you've got to get an email over ASAP so we can keep this thing moving forward, because we've got a deadline, it is a contract, and let's go get paid. I mean, this is go time. So
okay.
Don't wait. If you have a question tomorrow, don't wait till Thursday to get an answer. Shoot me an email.
Understood.
All right. Great job.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, this is cool. All right, who else? And that probably
brought
up 10 more questions. Yeah.
This is Felipe. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. So I have questions on the Easy Map Maker.
Uh-huh.
I'm following your video like you have on the module.
Uh-huh.
And when I go to city, all I have is mail city. I don't have property city. And I don't have property state. All I have is mail state and zip. For zip code, all I have is mail zip. I don't have none of the property stuff that you have.
You have that. So that's all based on the list that you bought from ListSource and what you added to it. So assuming you bought the same list that I did, then you'll have the same drop-down options. But it's pulling – Easy Map Maker is just pulling the column headers from your import.
Oh, okay. So I could just go ahead and create my map if I didn't get the extra stuff that you got?
Yep, and all you're doing when you select that drop-down, you're just telling MapMaker what information to put on the pin. And I want to see – you could choose address – but from my standpoint, when I go to that map, I want to see purchase price. And
right.
So what I like to choose is last sale date. And that way, when I go to that map, let's say I want to know how much I should offer on 123 Main Street. I'm going to go look up, you know, I'm going to go to that same area on my map. And then I can click on each of those pins or hover over them. And it's going to show me the purchase price. And I can say, okay, investors in this neighborhood are paying 20 to 25 grand. So I've got to be at 15.
Oh,
so that's,
okay,
that's how you use
now.
It. You can tell it to display whatever you want. But that, to me, that's the one I pick as last sale price, because that's when I go to the map, that's the data I want to see. Quickest.
Oh, okay.
Right? You can click on any pin and see all the data, but that makes sense?
Right, you want to get the price.
Yep, that's what I want to see.
All righty then, Mr. Mike, you answered my question.
Beautiful.
And that's all I have. I don't know if Gary has anything for you.
Yeah, Mike, this is Gary.
Hey, Gary.
Earlier you were talking about the closing and titles and all that.
Yep.
I guess I kind of know the answer to it, but I'm not sure. You can have a title company anywhere, right? It doesn't have to be in the state that you're working in.
They just have to be active in that area. So, for instance, like I was telling Steve, we have a title rep here in Denver that Paul and I have closed with for years. She couldn't go out of state until recently. She merged into a larger company, and now she's part of a much bigger title company that is active in all 50 states. So, not necessarily. You will find smaller local title companies that are only active in that market. And then you'll also find bigger companies like Boston National, Chicago, I think land titles all over the country that are everywhere. So it just depends, right? You'll have some that are regional, some that are local, some are national. You know, it's just like a restaurant chain, no different. So you have to answer your question. If you're trying to work with somebody local in your state and you're buying and selling in another state, you first have to shoot them an email or phone call and say, hey, I'm buying property over here. Can you pull title there for me? And they'll tell you.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Another question that I had, and a little confusing, but the other day we found a fixer-upper, and we ran the numbers to see how much work it would need. You know, we went on that
the rehab estimator?
Yeah, right. And to fix and flip, I think it was 23, and to hold was 33. But then I got lost because I couldn't find comparables the houses in that area. And so where do I look for comparables if they're not displaying them there on the assessor's website?
Yeah, so you can use FreedomSoft. So if you click back into that, a couple different ways. If you set that address up as a lead, I don't know if you were if you actually created a lead first in FreedomSoft, but if you have a lead record in FreedomSoft with an address, on the left side of the screen, you can click comparable sales, and that's one way. And it pulls data from Zillow, and it puts it on the map. You know, sometimes we do go to Zillow and look for comps. Sometimes I'll go to, I'll go to realtor.com and do research on what's available and currently listed there. So there isn't really one place. Most of us don't have MLS access. If you're a licensed agent, that's where you would go. But outside of that, that's where I go. Redfin sometimes has data. Trulia sometimes has good data. So, but yeah, start with FreedomSoft. Click comparable sales on the left-hand side. The other here's the thing in FreedomSoft. If you don't have it entered as a lead record, you can log in and go to the home screen. So you've got your marketing tab and the leads tab and the properties tab. Over on the far left, there's a little picture of a house. If you click that house, it'll take you to the home screen in FreedomSoft. And then if you look kind of in the top right corner, I think it's in gray lettering, it says run comps. And what you can do there is if you click on it, you'll put in the address, and FreedomSoft has a comps tool that you can use without having a lead created. Does that make sense? I'm trying to explain to you without using words and not looking at a computer screen. But
yeah, because usually where I used to get my comparables in the past was an assessor, so I'll try these different ones that you just mentioned.
Okay. Yeah, start with FreedomSoft. And then from there, I like to go to Zillow, put the address in, and see it, and see if you can pull some comps in the area.
Oh, yep. Well, every day we're learning something new and different, but we're definitely streaming.
I love it. Hey, when we're learning, we're making progress. So
there you go.
Yep, good stuff. Anything else, Gary?
Not right now, Mike. I think that's all I had. Thanks.
All right. Yep, who else?
Hey, Mike, this is Steve again. I got one more question on title for you. So I was just taking what you said a second ago and thinking about this. So if I get a new deal under contract and I take that contract and I go take it to title and open up escrow, so I'm going to get – and they're going to start title work, right?
Yep. They're going to do the research on it.
Right. So what is that? I'm sure there's a fee for that. I'm just thinking under the scenario that we try to do a deal and then it doesn't back out for whatever reason, buyers, you know, wrong pricing, whatever the thing is, and the deal doesn't get done.
Yep.
Then there's some fee to the title company. And I just didn't know, is that a grand? Is that 500? I know that it's normally about 1,000, but I thought that was after it was already closed.
Yeah. Great question. You're on it. This is the reason that I'm still up in the air with Boston National, because I got we haven't worked with them, and they sent me a list of their fees the other day, and I read through them, and on the very bottom it says $225 for canceled policies. And I've never paid for policies that don't close. And so I shot an email back and said, wait a minute, let me get this straight. I send you a contract, order title, and there's a $50,000 lien that the seller didn't know about that blows up the deal, and you want 2.25 from me.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yep, that's the way it works. And I said, because I'm not accustomed to paying that, never have. And so we are going back and forth currently with them on how that fee is going to work. And I'll tell you why, because we recently tied up a deal from a seller for 24 houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm about to order title work on all these, and if this deal blows up, that's a $5,400 check that you're saying we got to write.
Yep.
And so here's what happened is the lady went back to her manager. She goes, that decision's above my head. And they said, if you send us the 24, it won't be 2.25. we'll agree to something that works. And I'm not, that answer's still not sitting really good with me.
I hear you.
But yeah, I typically know, but I've had a longstanding relationship. And so that's something you absolutely want to ask and say, hey,
okay.
Let's say I order title and there's, you know, don't tell them and say, and I back out on the deal. Tell them, and we find out there's a, you know, a $50,000 lien that the seller didn't know about, blows up the deal. What happens?
Yep.
And this is one of those where they actually did work on the file. So I get it. I get the fee. I'm unsettled on it. That's why I'm still trying two title companies, because the other one has never charged me for files that don't close. So yeah, great question though.
Got it. So, well, I'll find out. But basically, you're opening it either way.
I'm opening it either way. Yeah, you can't close without.
Not
it,
you
so.
Necessarily, but you're gonna open it, the deal with the title company, regardless. There may be a fee, there may not. But okay.
You got it. You don't want to close without title. Nope.
No. I know that. I know that. I'm just in terms of the workflow. I'm with you. Okay.
I would call both of those. You have a line on two of them that investors use. Call both of them.
Okay.
And ask them, how do you handle double closings?
Yep.
And can it be the same funding? And is there a fee for files that get blown up with big liens that the seller didn't know about? How do those two things work?
Yep. Understood. Okay.
Good stuff.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey, Mike. Janie here. I've got a question.
Hey, Janie. Yeah.
Along with everything you were talking to Steve about, I know you told us about sending a bird dog out and paying them more to go inspect the property and stuff. Do you have your bird dogs do that for every property you have that you put a contract on?
Yes.
Okay.
And
so
not until it's under contract.
Right.
Yep.
And
the contract triggers further inspection, and you want them to photo or video document the house, because they're going to be your eyes. Here's the other way to do it. You have a great relationship with a buyer. Like I've got a guy in Jacksonville and who we just sold that $17,000 assignment to a couple weeks ago. And I call him first and I'm like, hey man, got another one. Here's what the seller's telling us. These numbers should work, assuming what they're saying is right. You go, go see it and tell me what you find. Because we have a great relationship, I don't have to pay a bird dog. I tell them, I'll let you have first dibs. Now, understand that this is a buyer that I got an email from a week ago that said I have $1.3 million to spend this month. I'm buying. So I'm not going to do that with anybody. But I know that if the deal fits what he's looking for, he'll close on it. And so I say, hey, here's the thing. I'll call you first, but I'm gonna need you to be my eyes on the ground. And he's like, perfect. I'll do that for you. So
okay, well,
if you don't have that relationship in place, pay your bird dog $25 to $35 based on how far you're making them drive.
Okay.
Yep.
But what about the a buyer that we want to sell it to? They want to inspect it. So then
you can do that as well. Yep, you can do that as well. So here's the answer. There are a couple different ways to do it. Because just like you said, here would be another option. I've got a deal, and I call you up, and I say, hey, Janie, just got this one under contract. Here's what the seller told me. I haven't seen it, right? You know me. I'm remote. I haven't seen it, but here's what they're telling me. Needs a roof, bam, bam, bam. I've got the fix-up estimated at about $25,000. I'm selling it for $33,000. Go take a look and let me know if you want it. From what I can tell, these numbers fit what you told me you're looking for perfect. And then you can absolutely let your buyer – because what's going to happen is you're going to go see it. And then I typically, if I know somebody's going to see it, I say, hey, walk it real quick and then call me from the kitchen. Because I want to hear from you while you're standing in there. I want to get as much intel as I can in case they don't want it, because I can use that either to renegotiate the price or to sell it to somebody else. And so I tell them to call me when you're standing there. And then I talk to them about it. Hey, is what the buyer told me correct? Can you get this thing done for about $25? And you'll tell me, yes or no. So, that's another way.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea, yeah.
If you want, if you want to, you know, photos and to have a good idea and to be able to market it like that, then you're going to send your bird dog to get pictures. But I've done it all three ways. So I tell you what you do is meet a buyer that you know is legit and say, hey, you know, I've told you I'm remote. Here's what I'm going to do. You have money to spend. I'm going to give you first dibs on this thing. So when I get them under contract, I'm going to send you over first for inspection. Sound like a plan? And then if you tell me you don't want it, then I'll take it to everybody else. So when you find a legit buyer that you know can close and has money to spend, set that up with them.
Yeah.
So now, right, you're building the relationship. You're kind of scratching their back a little bit. They're going to be willing to do right to be your eyes on the ground, and that's really valuable, and especially if they're a legit buyer that can close. Because I don't care if I sell every deal in Jacksonville, there's one guy, you know, game on. That's fine with me. I'm going to keep meeting buyers, but if he takes everything we tie up, so be it. I'm all for it. So.
Okay.
Yep. Good question.
Hey, Mike, Steve, one more time. One more question. You answer them, and then I keep thinking about it, and then something else comes up. So in the scenario that you've got a deal and you go back to the seller and say, hey, after inspection, we need to come down. How do you deal with that? Because you've already sent the contract to the title company with a certain price. Is there an addendum to the contract or what's the process?
Yeah, you can do an addendum or you can just send over new paperwork. And all you would do is once it was signed and back, you would just get a hold of title and say, hey, we had to renegotiate price. I'm sending over the new one. This is the relevant one at $10,000 instead of $15,000. Go ahead and get rid of that.
Understood.
One. Because buyer's same, right? Everything else is same. You're just changing price, maybe dates.
Yep, understood. Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
You got it. Yep. So either way, you can addend a contract. Here's the thing. Because then we just sent a new contract. We just did this today. I gave you a live scenario, Steve, a little while ago where we had it at $15,000, fire damage in the kitchen. We inspected it. We got to redo everything in the house. We called them back and said, hey, based on what we found, we can pay $8,000. There was a little bit of conversation, and they said, to my acquisitions guy, Chris. Chris, that leaves us with nothing. You know, can you at least get us to $10,000 so that we can walk away with something? And so we're going to buy it at $10,000. And we said, here's the thing. We can get to $10,000, but this is negotiation 101. If we're going to give something, we got to get something. So we said, yep, we can get you to $10,000, but what we're going to do to buy us a little more time to line up all the crews that this house needs is we're going to move that closing back 2 weeks. And that just bought us a little more time. We can always close early, but now we have a little more time to get our ducks in a row and line up some additional work on this thing. And so we said, you know, we can help you with 10. We're going to bump closing back 2 weeks. Everybody was fine. We just redid the contract. We didn't do an addendum. We just redid the contract quick. So yeah, that's how it's going to work. So
yeah, thank you.
This is great today. Yeah. Good stuff. I mean, this is when you're in the middle of it, right? First, we got to figure out how to get in the middle of it. And then we're going to talk to you. What do we do when we are in the middle of it? So great questions today on both ends. Good stuff. What else?
Mike, Gary again. On the bird dog, how do you usually pay them? Do you send them a money gram and you don't pay them until you close?
We use PayPal.
PayPal?
We pay, $3 per lead, just like it walks you through in the coaching center. We do not – bird dogs are not licensed. And so we do not pay them at closing because that's how real estate agents get paid who are licensed. And so we pay for the lead, $3 per lead. And the way that works is we tell them we'll pay you same day. Bring leads in. I usually click through a handful of them just to, you know, verify it's what we're looking for. I'm not going to, if they send in 100 leads, I'm not going to click through everyone. I'm going to grab a few at random, say these look good. I get their PayPal email address. Log into PayPal and send them $3 a lead times however many they send in.
Nice. Okay.
So they can get paid. I mean, you know, somebody wants to go out Friday night and they want to go work for me 3 hours from 12 to 3 on Friday, bam, they can go pull that money on Friday night and have fun. I'm sending it right now.
Good enough.
Yep. The quicker you pay, hungrier they'll get. Not always, but a lot of times.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
We pay them right away. Question.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I'm logging off.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yep.
Okay, Mike.
What else?
Mike?
Yeah.
Mike, this is Larry.
Hey. Yeah, what's up?
You're asking about our house in rural Georgia.
Which one?
We,
the one in the, yeah. What happened?
In today? Well, had a trouble with the DocuSign, but I think that's all worked out. We swapped and got a paid subscription for somebody to sign it, so it should be signed tonight sometime. And so, but it keeps wearing on my head, you know, the traditional ways of getting rid of it. But
yeah.
This house, just let me give this, it's on 1 acre. It's a big house,
yep.
Nice section of town. And I just know there's people up there in Yankee Land wanting to get out of there and be a Southern Belle, be a Southern plantation owner, and that's, you know, in a $300,000 house that could sell it and buy one half the price at twice the house. So I'm just trying to figure out how to advertise in those areas to try to get a retail buyer, because
yeah,
I could smell a home run when you sell a dream.
Yeah. The first thing is, right, you get it under contract first, clearly, get the paperwork back, and I know you know that. The second part is you're going to have a challenge selling to a traditional buyer unless they're cash, because they're most likely going to use financing, and now you've got a contract that's subject to a bank. So, you know, another great question with, you know, just a timely one. I just had this conversation with a guy. I've got a little deal in St. Louis that I'll happily sell to any of you for $50,000. It's turnkey ready. Closes on the 23rd of this month. 3-bed, 1-bath. Just needs to be cleaned. The owner's son is living there, taking care of the place. And this is because I'm always in sales mode, Larry, so give me another few seconds and then I'll get to my point. But turnkey ready.
Yeah.
$50,000. You can buy it for, we're selling it for $50,000. Rents at $800 a month. And my property manager is already there, ready to place somebody. So it's a 14.9 cap at 70% of gross rent. So there's got to be somebody on here that wants to buy this from me. Anyway, side note. The thing about what you – here's – I was talking to a buyer today. And here's what I have to ask, because he was referred to me by somebody else. This is the question I have to get to the bottom of. So I said, James, okay, so I just want to make sure I'm really clear, because this is going to determine how, if you end up buying it, how we put this together. Are you paying cash? He was talking about a bank. I said, are you going to pay cash for this thing and then do a cash out refinance to get your money back? Or are you going to come into it and you want to purchase it with bank money? And he said, I have to do the purchase with bank money. That totally changes everything.
Yeah.
Right now, because here's the problem. I said, all right, and he has a lender that's a small boutique bank. It's not Chase, Wells Fargo, whatever. So they may or may not do it, but I had to educate him on the question to ask. And I said, here's a traditional bank. Here's going to be their problem. Because what's going to happen here is the closing's on the 23rd, but if you're using a bank, they're not going to be able to move that quick. So I'm going to have to buy the property on the 23rd with private money, knowing that I'm then going to sell it to you. But here's the problem. This property is in a good, it's in a fixed up condition. So I'm going to buy it for $33,000. And then within 30 to 45 days, I'm going to try and sell it to him for $50,000. And what's the bank going to come back and say?
You're going to look at the numbers and you hadn't had that 90 days. Oh, I know.
Yeah. And here's the problem. The house is in good shape already. We haven't done any work to it. So this is right. I had to educate the buyer. I said, now listen, if this place needed work, and they see that I bought it for X amount, and then we can show that we did capital improvements to whatever that was, and that's why we're reselling it now at 50. A bank can swallow that. But this house, it's turnkey. It's ready to go now. So so I had to coach him through, here's what you're going to call that bank and say, hey, I'm trying to buy a house for $50,000. Here's the scenario. I'm going to buy it from a company that is going to purchase it for less than $50,000. The house is in good shape. They're a wholesaler. They're not going to do any capital improvements. Are we going to have a problem, yes or no? And so all of that to say this, I don't know what condition this place is in, but what's going to happen, you're going to be in my shoes, is you're going to say, because you're not gonna fix the place up. But if you do that and you sell to a bank owner, you are gonna have to own it and then sell it to them. You're gonna sell it for more than you just bought it for, and they're gonna say, how can the collateral be worth $50,000 if 30 days ago somebody bought it for $33,000? So you are going to have a cash retail buyer, which it's possible, but it's a shot in the dark, or you are going to have to take this thing down yourself, put some work into it, because I think it's, from what you told me, it's in good shape, but probably not, you know, not renovated. And then try and make your big spread.
Yep, that's what my mind isn't going. You know, it's just trying. And the reason my feeling on this is, after World War II, they called it the second great migration out of the South.
Okay.
And so many people moved up north to Detroit and all those areas for the good paying jobs. And then years back, probably 25 years back, so many of these people had retired, school teachers, everything, with houses that's worth three times, you know, what they are here. And they moved back down south and bought land and built big houses because, you know, they had equity up there that bought a whole lot of houses down here. And I'm still seeing that kind of mentality, people work in corporate America and say, you know, I want to go south. I want to live an easy lifestyle. I want to do where the winter is consists of 3 days of snow and a little bit of cold weather. And so,
So are there comps to support this house selling at a much higher price?
And if so,
how fixed up are they?
We're going to explore that. I know that the houses around it, I was told the hood's two blocks away, but in small southern towns, that can be a world away. You know, we're not talking, you know, because small town policemen, when they ride the streets, they're just streets they don't like people riding on.
Did you call real estate agents in this little town?
We have not touched anything on the real estate agents till we have the contract in the hand.
Okay. So as soon as you do, you have got to get somebody on the phone and say, what is my end game here? I happen to have a property. I typically buy in the city. I've found a city buyer who has a rural property. Help me out. What's the end game for this? And if they can help, I'm telling you, they're going to know either the landlord or they will tell you, you know, and give you an opinion. Here's what I'm going to tell you. If they give you an opinion about, oh, yeah, buy this thing, put $50,000 into it, and here's what you'll sell it for, you know, that you've got to think, okay, they're a real estate agent. They want my listing. That's not that they're lying to you, but they're always going to talk through that lens. So you've got to find data that shows, you know, hey, there is some fix and flip activity in this area, and then they're going to know about it. Is this a local buyer, or if I do that, is this a buyer that's coming from, you know, moving from the city or a different place and just wants, you know, they're either retired or about to retire and they just want a place that's more quiet? You know, what's the profile of who's going to live here? What's the end game? So,
well, the first thing we'll do is tomorrow, as soon as we get the contract in the hand, we will call and find out what locally owned banks are available. Talk to a bank officer and see anybody looking for a house, because usually in a small town, you have one loan officer that knows everybody's business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
see if they have a problem with what you're about to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then I would say, Here's the thing, guys, is you're going to have to figure out, you know, we've been having the talk the last couple of weeks here on what do we do, you know, be able to say yes to things, no to other things. I think there's some money here, but don't, as you get into this, don't, if the deal isn't there, don't try and make one, because you're just going to spend way more time on it, and you've got time to do it already. So just, right, it's of course, you're right, we got to say yes, but the challenge is saying no. Let's not try and grab everything and make a deal. Let's figure out what we do, what our buyers want, and go do that 1,000 times. So I'm giving you some input on this, but I'm also going to say, if this isn't, right, don't try and force a round peg through a square hole if this is going to eat up all your time, because all time in here is taken away from running deals where you know you have a ton of buyers in the city. So, I'm going to let you, you know, you're business owners. There are two of you. You know, you just handle that the way, but I'm not going to give you input on this particular type of deal without throwing a little disclaimer out there at the same time. So, because it's not really what you're looking for. You're going to have it under contract, but it's not really what you set out to find, right? Here's the thing. You may find it, I don't know, you may find it is, and that somebody's going to say, oh, my gosh, you can move this all day long, and here's who you're going to call, blah, blah, blah. Say, great, why don't you tell you what, you know them, get a hold of them, here's our price, add your fee onto it, and let's get this deal to the closing table. That's one possible outcome. And you go cash a nice check on this thing. I guess we'll see. Just don't let's not go 3 more weeks on this thing and still try and make it work if it doesn't.
Yeah. I had a little FYI for you and for everybody else out there. You know, you told me to go to list stores and try to find any other, you know, buyers and stuff out there. Because it was going to end up being such a small list, they would not sell that to me because, you know, you pay for these lists with a credit card. It has to be $50 or more. So, no, they will not
do
that. Really
okay, call customer service and say, I'm trying to give you money, and they said, we won't take it.
Yeah, I did. I called them.
That's like the little sign at the gas station that says you got to buy $5 or you can't, or you got to pay cash.
Yeah. I said, is there something I can pay you or can, you know, I just need these small, you know, this small list. And they said, nope, it has to be $50 more. Okay.
That's crazy. And how much was the, let me ask you this, how many records did you have?
Oh, shoot. I was doing all that on Friday.
Were there 4 or were there 50?
Oh, no, there was maybe like 30-something.
Wow.
In kind of an expanded area. And
you're
an expanded
area. You're going to have to decide if, hey, I want these 35 names, run my $50.
Yeah.
And if you spend 50 to make 10 grand, so what? Those are your buyers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the data. I tell you what, get the contract. Get a feel for this thing from a couple locals, and if that's the case, don't trip over 50 to.
Yeah.
Pick up five to 10 grand.
I thought I would go the other route first. You know, check with the realtors in the area and do all that first, and then if I'm not coming up with anything, then you know I'd pay it. But it's not really, you know, an area where we are wanting to do any more business necessarily. It's just something
correct.
We just
I agree with
kind
you.
Of
I agree
yeah.
With you.
Well,
however,
Larry just wants to know Larry wants to know if you don't want to move down here and be a Southern gentleman with him.
Do I have to start talking weird or something? I got to start working on my accent. How does that work?
They just hang
me out. Hey, here's what I want to know. If you live down south and you talk to somebody from Denver, do we have an accent or do you guys know that you have the accent? How does this work?
You don't. See, I'm originally from Ohio, so I know people in Ohio have accents and people, you know, up north. I can pick up people who live in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, because I don't have family there.
When you go that far north, what's that?
No. You do not.
No.
I know. I have picked up some of the southern drawl, and Larry definitely does because he's lived in the south much longer. But I don't think you do. Mm-mm.
Okay, so when you live there, you realize that you have the accent.
Yeah,
Mike,
I didn't think I did when I lived in Ohio.
what's that?
I know now. When I
Mike,
lived
you
there,
you have an American
I didn't
accent.
Think I
an American accent. That's what that is. I wish I sounded cooler. I just don't.
I tried to tell these Brits that I didn't have an accent. They said, rubbish. You got an American accent.
Rubbish.
I said, no, you have an English accent. No, it's our language. Said, fair enough.
Fair enough. That's right. That's
the English started over there first, so.
Yeah, so we're the ones that talk funny.
Yeah.
All right. I tell you what, that Southern accent and go other places because I don't. What people just trust somebody with a Southern accent. Why is that? Haven't they done study? I feel like they've done studies on this.
I think they have.
I think they have too.
And we're not all as dumb as we sound sometimes.
Not at all, but no, not at all. But trusting and you know, good people and honest and
yeah.
I think my experience is a lot of good things come with that Southern accent. So anyway, crazy. I'm glad we got to the bottom of this accent thing. Very, very productive. 3 minutes here. So cool.
I just corporate relocation of all these big companies.
What else, you guys? Anything else?
We're working on some other stuff. Larry was making calls today, and there's a company down there that has like 40.
What's that?
That has like 40 some properties in Tampa that he sent.
Yep.
He just emailed over the list this afternoon, and I've got to go through them and get the info on them because they're just like the tax. Tax assessor site, you know, the number.
Okay.
So I've got to sit there and
yep.
punch in those numbers and get all the info on all these properties. But they're all for sale, so yeah.
You guys are gonna have to figure out how to deal with a list like this. I'm telling you, we're working on 5 right now. So we have the one for 24 under contract. We got another one for 42 today. And what we're constantly trying to evaluate is what of these is worth our time. You know, we're probably not going to buy the whole thing, but, you know, and then this one with 42, the guy comes back and says, oh, this one just went under contract. And they have these lists out to a bunch of people typically.
Yeah.
So I'll just tell you how we're handling it. Our main focus is still sellers buying one property at a time, talking to people that have a legitimate problem. Because you get a list of 42, you've got an investor on the other end. I'm not saying you can't pick up deals from it, but, you know, where we're at, we have 2 acquisitions people currently. So Chris puts a little bit of his day towards lists and running some numbers because we have seen some good deals come over as part of a list. But if you have one acquisitions person, I feel like the sweet spot is talk to a motivated seller. So you guys handle that how you want to, but I'm just telling you, the more active you get, you're going to bump into lists on a fairly frequently. So you're going to have to figure out how to handle them, what to do with them, and how much time to spend. So you guys have, you know, there are 2 of you. That's an advantage, obviously. You know, Larry, you can jump on the phone, and Janie, you can be, you know, maybe the list, you look at a couple and you say, hey, this seems pretty promising.
Yeah,
so.
I'm good at research. Larry's good at talking. And we're in the process of hiring 2 new acquisitions salespeople.
Cool.
So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brad and Rob, just so you guys know, they have they have a guy working the phone. They have a couple, but some have come and gone. They've had some turnover, just like everybody else. And then they have a person that specifically works online, MLS, Craigslist, and they have an offer goal on a weekly basis. So they'll buy if it's a deal, they'll buy it. They don't care where it comes from. Their highest conversion rate, which I've shared on here before, is vacant house out of state owner. Of all the leads they're bringing in, that's the highest converting vacant house out-of-state owner. But that said, you know, if you're going to run at volume and you want to get to 5, 10, 20 a month, whatever, wherever you're trying to go, you're going to buy deals from a lot of different sources. And so they have somebody paying attention to what's hitting the MLS, what are the for sale by owner stuff look like on Craigslist, and then that, you know, that's their focus. So that's a future cast for us on the phone. I'm not doing any of that. We're calling vacants. I don't have somebody dedicated to that, but good to know where you can go. Hey, I just noticed too, we're at 95 minutes on the call. So I want to honor everybody's time, including mine. Anything else we can wrap up here quick?
Hey, Mike, really quick, this is Sherry.
Yep.
Hi, Sherry. Did you get my email for my cities?
Yeah, I replied to it, and I asked
if I
had time today to jump on a phone call.
Oh, I did not see that, and I kept looking to see. I did not see your email, darn it.
check spam and see if it's in there. So assuming you find it, let me know sometimes at work tomorrow. We both need to be on a computer.
Okay.
And we'll walk through a couple of those clicks that you're just missing so we can get some good data into that spreadsheet.
Okay. I mean, I can be on my phone, I guess, while we're talking. I'll just get on the – because, I mean, I won't have my computer at work, and I'm at work from 7 to 4. That makes sense.
Okay, so we are going to – you've got to be on your computer where you could pull data. So either on a break at work or we have to figure out something when you're not at work.
Okay.
Because I want you on a computer with list source open, realtor.com open.
Okay.
So, yeah, let me know when you can get that figured out.
Okay, well, we'll have to do that soon because I want to pick that and...
Yeah, the sooner the better. I was hoping for today. I bet the reply hit your spam folder. So if it did, white label the coaching email, which is the success team at Real American Wealth, so that future emails from us don't go to spam.
Okay, sounds good. All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Did somebody else have a quick question?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no worries. I think I thought I heard Sherry and somebody else. Maybe they had something quick.
Hey, Mike. Hussein.
Hey, Hussein.
How are you? Just wanted to check on my RhythmSoft software.
I didn't see an email from you. Did you email me?
Yeah, I did it last week. Last Thursday, probably, or Monday.
Did I reply to it?
I don't think so. I can send it again.
Yeah, I don't think I saw it.
Oh, okay. I'll send
it to you
again.
Yeah, because when I'm on a call here, I try and not write anything down, and I know I'll forget. So if you can remind me through an email, that would be great. Sorry about that. I don't remember seeing something.
Okay.
Yeah, shoot me an email. Thank you. Anybody else? All right. Great call tonight, everybody. A lot of good stuff. Again, you know, we had about 50-50 on pre-leads and before we get into the middle of transactions, and then a lot of great questions on what to do when we're there. So that's exactly why we have this. That's the conversation.
Mike,
so great stuff.
Mike, I have one question.
Yeah.
We actually worked on one fix and flip.
Saying, hang on, somebody's doing dishes. Hey, somebody's doing dishes or something. Hit star 6 for us. All right, Hussein, speak up for me, bud.
Okay. We bought one property for the fix in October.
Okay.
We did fix up the property,
okay,
and then we put in the market
okay.
on MLS, and then we actually got an offer today. And we bought it for 310, closing was 6,000. We spent about 37,000. So total we spent was 43,500. And
so
we
you bought it for 310,000.
Right.
Right. Put 40
right.
in. Okay. So 350.
43,500 we spent including closing.
Okay.
So total is about 353.
Yeah, 353, yep. And what'd you get an offer for?
425.
Four and a quarter?
Yeah.
I love it. Did you accept it? Or what'd you have to list to that?
We have a team of members. They're looking to get 430. So we're still waiting.
And you're at 425?
425. I have an offer in hand.
Wow. Bird in the hand's worth two in the bush, you're saying. And you're only off five, buddy.
Yeah. So the only issue is like I don't know bank appraisal will do that 425 or not.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You're not sure if they'll appraise for 4.25, but you're holding out for 430.
Right.
That doesn't make sense to me. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
Logic says if you're concerned about the appraisal, here's what I'm telling you in the fix and flip game. If you're turning a profit, sell the deal, go find another one.
Yeah.
Depending on your market, real estate is up nationwide, and listing days are down because demand is up, supply is low. What happens in a market like this is the longer that property sits, people just start to assume there's something wrong with it. Why hasn't it sold yet?
Yeah.
Got to be something wrong.
I agree. We just listed the property last Saturday, actually. So within one week, I have 15 people saw the property. I have one offer, and he's up to 425.
And you're $5,000 off full price.
Yeah.
You had it listed at 430, right? And you have an offer at 425.
No, we listed for 450.
Oh, 450.
Yeah.
I thought you said 430.
430, we want to accept it, to our team.
Gotcha. What's your profit at 430?
430, the profit will be about 6. Subtracting the listing agent commission will be around.
Six percent. Oh, that's
6%. 3%. Just the buyer commission.
$13,000. 77 minus 13. So around 77 64. minus 13. 64. Yeah. All I can do is tell you what I'd do. I'm telling you, in the fix and flip game, when we have a deal that takes profit, I would sell that deal all day long. I mean, you could maybe counter for a little bit higher and see if they'll come up.
Yeah.
But man, what a bird in the hand, buddy. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
In that game, and here's the thing. I know you guys are all on the same side of the table, so you're all owners, and you don't have borrowed money per se.
Correct.
But I'm telling you. Everybody wins when you take a profit. That's my input.
Yeah.
That's my input. You can sit there and hold out and say, we love this place. We put sweat equity in and blah, blah, blah. And I'm telling you, that game works really good when you can list a property like that, grab an owner, maybe you counter. But we had somebody come to the table like that. I mean, out of 15 showings, you got one offer.
Right.
Why out of 15 showings did you not get 5?
The place is small, a little bit, and the bathroom we have it is in near the garage, so a lot of people doesn't like that. But
so it's got some quirks. Now you're really talking me into taking the offer.
Right. Yep.
What
and
I'd
then,
do. So,
yeah.
That's all I can tell you is what I'd do.
Yeah.
I'd sell it.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree with you.
If you have a flawless house and here's the thing. If you had a flawless house and you had 15 showings that quick, you would have had more than one offer.
Yeah, that's true.
So you've got a house with a major quirk.
Yeah.
And you still have somebody willing to buy it.
Willing to accept, yeah. Because the property is in hot place and it's excellent school district, 10 out of 10. And it's close to the train station to going to New York City.
Yep.
That's a plus point.
I'm telling you what I'd do is turn it, take the profit, put the money into a new one. That's what I'd do.
I agree. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Welcome. All right, everybody. Hey, we covered it all today. We even threw a little fiction slip in there at the end. So, good stuff. Any questions here, obviously, before Thursday, get them into the coaching email. And great call. Keep your feet on the gas. I know you will. A lot of good stuff happening.
Thanks, Mike. Have a good night.
Yes, thanks,
care,
Mike.
Buddy.
Thank you.
Yep, see ya.
Bueno, ¿qué era?
A las 7:30.
¿A las 7:30? Ok.
Digo, a las 7.